The next thing I know, I feel a sort of electrical buzz in my brain, which is very pleasant. No other sensation is quite the same. Perhaps the closest thing is watching your very favorite scene on a DVD, looping on auto-repeat, over and over. Still, we shouldn't do what we shouldn't do. How, as thinking beings, can we break out of this loop? This is a big project. I work hard to solve the problem, but this work costs so much energy. Maintaining this grip on myself is really, really, really tough. It's at these times that we need your help with patience, guidance, and love. Of course, we want you to stop us from doing what we're not supposed to do, but we also want you to understand what we're going through at these times. Question 53. Why are you obsessive about certain things? We don't obsess over certain things because we like it or because we want to. People with autism obsess over certain things because we'd go crazy if we didn't. By performing whatever action it is, we feel a bit soothed and calmed down. But then, whenever someone tells me off for doing the action or even prevents me from repeating it, I feel utterly miserable. I never actually wanted to do it in the first place, and now I end up hating myself even more for not being able to control my own actions. Whenever our obsessive behavior is bothering other people, please stop us right away, whatever way you can. The person who's suffering the most is the one who's causing all the headaches for everyone else. That is, the one with the autism. Even though it looks as if we're frolicking about and having the best time, inside we're aching and hurting because we know we don't even have control over what our own bodies are doing. All that said, when our obsessive behavior isn't actually bothering anyone, I'd ask you just to keep a quiet eye on us. It won't last forever. One fine day, however hard we have tried to will ourselves to stop before, the obsessive action suddenly stops itself without warning. Like, how come? Somehow our brain flashes up a game over signal. The sign works like when you've just guzzled down an entire bag of sweets. The need to obsess about whatever it is all used up. When that sign appears, I feel set free. Like someone who can finally put aside all of last night's dreams. The problem is, how to help people with autism stop their obsessive actions in cases when they are bothering others. To you who are helping us, I'd say this. Please handle and approach our behavioral issues with a strong faith that they are definitely going to pass at some point in the future. When we are stopped from doing what we want, we may well make a terrible song and dance about it, but in time, we'll get used to the idea. And until we reach that point, we'd like you to stick with it and stick with us. The Black Crow and the White Dove. There was once a black crow who liked a certain song called The Seven Little Crows, which began, "Crow, crow, crow, why do you caw?" Except in this song, crows and stories are bullies and villains who everyone hates. This troubled the black crow, who would ask himself, "How come it's always the crows who are the bad guys?" One day, a white dove who had lost her way met the black crow. She asked, "Where does this path go?" Then the white dove stared down at the ground, looking lonely. The black crow wondered what was wrong and asked, "What's the matter?" On the point of tears, the white dove said, "I've been searching for the path to happiness for a long, long time, but I still can't find it anywhere. And I'm supposed to be the bird of peace, too." The black crow was surprised to learn that even a bird as beautiful and as loved by everyone as the white dove, nonetheless, had deep problems to worry about. His answer was this, "But all paths are one connected path." The white dove looked taken aback by this unexpected answer. But after a time, she smiled. "How about that? So the path I've been searching for all this time is the path I am already on." In excellent spirits, the white dove flew off up into the blue sky. Then the black crow, too, turned his head skyward, then flapped his wings vigorously, and away he flew. And the black crow looked no less perfect against the deep blue than the white dove. Question 54. Why do you need cues and prompts? People with autism are sometimes unable to move on to their next action without a verbal prompt. For example, even after we ask for a glass of juice and are given it, we won't actually start drinking until someone said, "Enjoy," or "Go ahead and drink then." Or even after the person with autism has announced, "Right, I'll hang the laundry now," he won't get started until someone has said back, "Okay, that's great." I don't really know why some people with autism need these cues, but I do know that I'm one of them. Since we already know what we'll be doing next, surely we should just be able to get on with it unprompted, right? Yes, I think so too. But the fact is, doing the action without the cue can be really, really tough. In the same way as you can't walk across the street until the light turns green, I can't switch on the next action until my brain receives the right prompt. Doing the next action without obeying the prompt rule is terrifying. It's enough to make me lose the plot completely. Once we're through the terrifying phase, we can, bit by bit, become used to the idea that doing things without the prompt is possible. But getting to that point isn't something we can do alone, as you can tell, by the mega fuss we make every time. We cry, we scream, we hit out and break things. But still, we don't want you to give up on us. Please keep battling alongside us. We are the ones who are suffering the most in these scenes, and badly, badly want to free ourselves from our own chains. Question 55. Why can you never stay still? My body's always moving about. I just can't stay still. When I'm not moving, it feels as if my soul is detaching itself from my body, and this makes me so jumpy and scared that I can't stay where I am. I'm always on the lookout for an exit. But even though I'm forever wanting to be someplace else, I can never actually find my way there. I'm always struggling inside my own body, and staying still really hammers at home that I'm trapped here. But as long as I'm in a state of motion, I'm able to relax a little bit. Everyone tells people with autism, "Calm down, stop fidgeting, stay still," when we're busy moving around. But because I feel so much more relaxed when I am moving, it took me quite a while to work out exactly what their "calm down" even meant. Finally, I've come to understand that there are times when I'm not supposed to be moving about. The only way we can learn to do this is by practicing, a little at a time. Question 56. Do you need visual schedules? I understand that any plan is only a plan and is never definite, but I just cannot take it when a fixed arrangement doesn't proceed as per the visual schedule. I understand that changes can't always be avoided, but my brain shouts back, "No way, that's not acceptable." So speaking for myself, I'm not a big fan of having visual schedules around the place. People with autism may look happier with pictures and diagrams of where we're supposed to be and when, but in fact, we end up being restricted by them. They make us feel like robots, with each and every action pre-programmed. What I'd suggest is that instead of showing us visual schedules, you talk through the day's plan with us, verbally and beforehand. Visual schedules create such a strong impression on us that if a change occurs, we get flustered and panicky. Observing that the new change can also be shown on the schedule is beside the point, I'm afraid. The message I want to get across here is, please don't use visual things like pictures on our schedules, because then the activities on the schedules and their times and timings get imprinted too vividly onto our memories. And when that happens, we end up stressing ourselves over whether what we're doing now is or isn't matching up with what was on the schedule. In my case, I end up checking the time so often that I'm no longer able to enjoy what I'm doing. People who don't live with autism often think that the rest of us won't be able to understand the plan for the day just by listening. But give it a try. And although we might ask you the same questions over and over, we will get the hang of it and ask you less and less. Sure, this will take time, but I think it's easier for us in the long run. Of course, when it comes to explaining the order that you do certain actions in, or instructions about how to make such and such an object, visual aids like pictures can help us a lot. But being shown photos of places we're going to visit on an upcoming school trip, for example, can spoil our fun. Question 57. What causes panic attacks and meltdowns? I don't know if you can understand this one. Panic attacks can be triggered by many things, but even if you set up an ideal environment that gets rid of all the usual causes for a given person, we would still suffer panic attacks now and then. One of the biggest misunderstandings you have about us is your belief that our feelings aren't as subtle and complex as yours. Because how we behave can appear so childish in your eyes, you tend to assume that we're childish on the inside too. But of course, we experience the same emotions that you do. And because people with autism aren't skillful talkers, we may in fact be even more sensitive than you are. Stuck here inside these unresponsive bodies of ours, with feelings we can't properly express, it's always a struggle just to survive. And it's this feeling of helplessness that sometimes drives us half crazy and brings on a panic attack or a meltdown. When this is happening to us, please just let us cry or yell and get it all out. Stay close by and keep a gentle eye on us. And while we're swept up in our torment, please stop us from hurting ourselves or others. Question 58. What are your thoughts on autism itself? I think that people with autism are born outside the regime of civilization. Sure, this is just my own made-up theory, but I think that, as a result of all the killings in the world and the selfish planet wrecking that humanity has committed, a deep sense of crisis exists. Autism has somehow arisen out of this. Although people with autism look like other people physically, we are in fact very different in many ways. We are more like travelers from the distant, distant past. And if, by our being here, we could help the people of the world remember what truly matters for the Earth, that would give us a quiet pleasure. Forward. I wrote this story in the hope that it will help you to understand how painful it is when you can't express yourself to the people you love. If this story connects with your heart in some way, then I believe you'll be able to connect back to the hearts of people with autism too. I'm right here. Shun used to think that he knew himself very well, but from that day on, he was no longer sure. Everyone's staring at my face. The early evening sky was ominous with orange clouds bound by ash gray. Why are they all staring at me? When Shun had emerged from his local supermarket, an old man came over and asked, "What are you doing here?" Shun had never met him before. He wore a red hat pulled down low over his eyes, a white t-shirt and black knee-length shorts, even though it was winter. Never talk to strangers, Shun had told himself, and started hurrying for home. And that was the moment when Shun noticed everyone staring at my face. His first thought was that everyone was worrying about him, but no, it wasn't that kind of look. How to put it? Not a surprised look, not a searching gaze, more of an icy, heart-chilling stare. Whatever it was, Shun ran off home. "I'm back!" Shun was relieved to get back home, safe and sound at last. His mom was busy preparing supper as usual. Shun opened the fridge and spoke to his mom while he took out a carton of juice. "Hey, Mom, today I..." Then Shun's words just dried up. She was just standing there, apron on, pan in hand, her hair and clothes the same as they were when Shun had left home earlier. But still, Shun couldn't move a muscle. That icy stare again. Everything seemed to be revolving around him in slow motion. "Get away from here. Go. Now. Get out." Was Shun thinking this? Or was someone ordering him? Shun managed to marshal his unmoving body into action, and he fled outside, almost howling. Shun found himself in a park, with no memory of how he'd arrived there. Even though it was cold, his body was soaked in sweat. He was exhausted. What's going on? To try to get a grip on things, Shun decided to look back over the day. "I woke up, I went to school, I came home. So far, so normal. And after that, he remembered nothing. What the hell did I do next? Shun sat on his bench, staring into space, while the wintry wind blew all around him. Like the hole in the middle of a donut, the memory had somehow fallen out from Shun's mind. He couldn't even cry. How strange that a person can keep his head, even when things have become as desperate as this. The sun was sinking low now. "I have to do something about this," Shun thought. Yet at the same time, he was also feeling, "Whatever happens to me, happens." How much time had gone by? Shun noticed darkness all around him. He hauled himself to his feet. With no clear destination in mind, Shun carried on walking. Nobody else was around. Maybe all the people were in their houses. However lonely Shun might have felt, he didn't want to see anyone, not even his friends. "I wonder if they're worrying about me at home by now." Shun's feet led him back to his house. But it looked as though his house was in complete darkness. Shun's dad was supposed to come home from work early that day, so Shun wondered where his parents could have gone. At the same time, he felt relief to be back. "They must have gone out to look for me," he thought. "And it wasn't as if anyone was actually hassling me earlier. They kept staring at me in that weird way, that's all." Feeling much better now, Shun decided to wait for his parents in front of his house. The winter sky at night was beautiful, and the flickering of the stars soothed his heart. Footsteps drew near. That must be Mom and Dad. Shun went running up to them. "I'm really, really sorry to make you worry about me. I just..." But something was very wrong about them. Maybe they can't recognize me in the dark. So Shun grabbed his mother by her arm. Or he thought he did, but her arm wasn't there. What? This can't be happening. Shun had absolutely no idea what was going on. He just stood there, struck dumb, as his parents walked by right in front of him. All Shun could do was repeat to himself, "This can't be true. It can't be true." He crouched on the ground, hugging his knees. "What's happening to me? What's going on? Help me! Help!"
"Ah, so here you are." Shun heard a voice and looked up.
Standing there was the old man he'd met outside the supermarket. He was looking down at Shun with a kind face.
"You're all right. You're all right. Let's go back together."
The old man took hold of Shun's hand. Shun just looked at the old man. Softly, the old man told Shun, "You don't belong to this world anymore." Shun didn't have a clue what he was talking about. "Shun," the old man said, "you didn't notice the moment that you died. On your way to the supermarket, I'm afraid you were hit by a car that ran the red light." The memory of the scene slowly returned to Shun. "Yeah, that's right. I meant to dodge the car, but then I sort of froze and couldn't move. Yes,
Then I was hit, and I thought, what an ungodly mess this is going to be. But then I came to again, and there I was, still outside the supermarket.
Shun's eyes began to brim with tears.
So I'm dead? Me? Dead? And I can't even stop blubbering. I don't want to be dead. No. No, no, no.
Shun cried, and he kept on crying.
How much time had gone by?
Nobody can cry forever, after all.
By and by, Shun's tears dried up, but his mind was still blank.
The old man spoke. Righto. What say we go back now?
Back? Go back where?
But my home's right here.
Shun had a quick peek into his house through the window. He could see into the living room.
Crying.
Mom and Dad are both crying their eyes out.
Shun's eyes started filling up once again.
So what am I supposed to do now?
The old man motioned to Shun and began walking, and, as if drawn after him by an invisible cord, Shun followed. The old man strode out toward the west.
What's waiting for me up ahead?
Even though Shun was dead, he was still gripped by the fear of death. In a quaking voice, he asked, "Where are we going?"
The old man put his arm around Shun's shoulder and replied, matter-of-factly, "We're off to heaven, of course."
"Oh, I've, never been to heaven before."
The old man laughed out loud. "Obviously."
The path to heaven.
"Yes, I read about it in a book a long time ago. It was a beautiful white path leading upward to heaven, with the loveliest never-ever-seen flowers all around."
Thinking these things, Shun kept pace with the old man. About half an hour may have passed.
Shun was wondering if the path to heaven could really be as plain and dull as this one. What's more, he didn't feel the remotest bit dead. Even though things had looked so desperate and bleak before, Shun was now feeling much more like his old self again.
"Excuse me, sir, will we be arriving in heaven anytime soon? It's just that I feel tired enough to keel over and die."
The old man snorted out a laugh.
So Shun snorted out a laugh too.
"Who would have guessed it?" thought Shun. "You can find something to laugh at in any situation, even when you're dead."
Mulling this over, Shun found he was feeling happier.
"Well, you finally smiled about something," said the old man. "Then the path to heaven begins right here."
Serenely, he raised both his hands toward the sky. He seemed to be saying something, but Shun couldn't catch what it was.
"Now that I think of it, somebody once told me how when we die, we become stars. Must have been Mom, I guess. She was always on my side. Dad gave me a lot of time too, mind. But no more games of tossing a ball to each other now."
Shun looked up at the night sky and gave a small sigh.
"What do you reckon?" said the old man. "Time to be off?"
Shun grew afraid again. "Am I dying? No, no, I'm already dead. But what's going to happen to me now? If only Mom..."
Shun's whole body started shaking.
The old man noticed. He gave Shun a concerned hug.
"There's nothing to worry about. You'll only be gone for an instant."
"Only gone for an instant?" Shun was confused. "What's going to become of me?"
Slowly, surely, the scene in front of Shun grew hazy, and he collapsed on the spot.
Down in his deep and dreamless sleep, Shun was thinking, "How come people have to die? There's still so much I want to do." Then, fearfully, Shun opened his eyes to see what had happened. An ancient man in white robes stood before him.
And it dawned on Shun that this must be God. In fact, this God was the spitting image of the one Shun had seen at the art museum. Wow. God. I'd better be on my best behavior. To pay his respects, Shun leapt to his feet. Huh? My feet are gone. So ghosts really do float around without any feet. But then Shun realized something that nearly gave him a heart attack. It's gone! It's completely gone! My body isn't anywhere! This was too much, and Shun lost his head, forgot that he was in the presence of God, and started freaking out. Oi, 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 there's no need for that, said God. The voice seemed vaguely familiar to Shun, as if he'd heard it long ago. You'll hardly be needing your body now that you're dead, will you? All the things that used to tie you down and hold you back, they've gone now.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I'm dead. Despite the fact Shun had no body, all the energy drained right out of it. Please, sir, what's going to happen to me?
Absolutely nothing is going to happen to you because, well, look around you. You've gone to heaven.
So what's this place like exactly?
Shun examined his surroundings. The dark was darker than the depths of night, but scattered all about with pulsing stars. I never saw so many stars where I used to live.
Wow, stars really are infinite.
Lost in their pure beauty, Shun gazed and gazed, letting thoughts of his death slip away. For the time being, do whatever you wish, said God. I dare say you're still very much attached to your last life, and still have unfinished business to chew over. But you'll come to understand how things stand by and by.
And with that, God's outline began to waver and vanish, like mist dissolving into more mist. It's all very well for him to say, do whatever you wish, Shun thought. He was at a loss. He looked down, and there he saw the earth, piercingly blue and beautiful in the darkness. So this here is space I'm standing in. But what do I do now? How am I supposed to live when I don't even have a body? All alone as well. The first thing I have to work out is how do you live when you're dead?
Shun had no idea.
For a while, Shun stayed where he was. This heaven sure is different than how I used to imagine heaven would be. I used to think that heaven was full of wonderful things to eat and fun things to do all day, with nothing to make you suffer or give you a hard time. Shun shouted out loud, Hey! What's going on here? Just take me back home, right now! No sooner had he said this than Shun felt himself hurtling away at a velocity he had never before experienced.
Now where am I?
Wait, yes, this is my house. Mom?
Shun rushed from room to room looking for his mom. He found her in the Japanese-style room, next to the living room. Shun's heart was pounding.
Mom?
He called her from behind softly. She did not turn around for him.
I'm well and truly dead now, aren't I?
Shun's final hope was completely dashed. Downcast, he went around to stand in front of his mom so he could at least take a proper look at her face. She looked so sad and crushed in her black clothes. In his mind, Shun apologized to her.
Mom, I'm so, so sorry I died.
Between Shun and his mom, a subtle breeze flowed. Her hand touched his body, the same body she apparently couldn't see because it wasn't there. And Shun felt the same warmth he used to feel back when he was very small, when his mom gave him a cuddle. Shun's dad came in from the living room.
Hi, what are you doing?
Somehow, replied Shun's mom.
I feel Shun's in here.
Shun's always with us. Always.
Shun wasn't quite sure what to think of this. I'm dead and gone, but my feelings are the same as they ever were. I want to help Mom and Dad, but there's nothing I can do.
Shun shut his eyes, and in the same instant, he was flying away at an astonishing speed. Shun was back in the place called Heaven. Space was really quiet. All alone, Shun drifted away in his thoughts. He didn't know what to think about himself anymore. He had never imagined that after he died, he would be so utterly alone. I wish there was somebody here I could talk to. Then he heard something.
What's that sound?
Shun listened intently. It was a boy's voice. Shun called, "Is there anybody out there?"
"You must be the new one, right? Hi, I'm Kazuo."
Shun was delighted.
"Brilliant. I thought there was nobody but me."
"You can't make us out yet, but there are as many people around here as there are stars," said Kazuo. "If you wish it, you'll be able to talk to us, any of us, whenever you want. This world is beyond time, outside of space. Here is perfect freedom. I've been living here in Heaven for 80 years, you know."
"I don't know what to do here," said Shun. "You say we have perfect freedom, but actually, there's nothing here."
Kazuo just laughed. "You ought to do the things you couldn't do when you were still alive." With that, Kazuo slipped away somewhere.
"So I ought to do the things I can only do now that I'm dead." At that point, numberless lights wrapped around Shun, comforting him like a shimmering blanket. It was like being rocked in a cradle, and at long last, all the tension Shun had felt up to that point began to ebb away. For the first time in many days, Shun fell asleep. Shun was getting used to life in Heaven now, and he had made a lot of friends, as Kazuo had said. Everyone was kind, and there were no barriers of language, ethnicity, or era. People lived so peacefully here that it was difficult to believe how much they had fought and quarreled when they were alive. Shun had never dreamed that owning nothing could be so blissful. He had also, by now, done many of the things that he couldn't during his lifetime. He'd visited every corner of the earth. He'd spoken with many people in Heaven. Everything was fresh and exciting. Sometimes, Shun visited his parents' home, too. It was sad that he couldn't speak with them directly, but it made him happy just to see their faces and listen to them talk about him. This was enough for Shun to stay brave and go on. It was on a day like this, when Shun was visiting his home, that his mom looked strange. She was miserable and didn't seem to be eating. Staring at the photograph of her son, tears were in her eyes.
"Shun, I don't think I can go on living like this without you here. I want to be where you are." Saying this, she collapsed on the table, face down and weeping. Shaken, Shun too started to cry.
"But I thought she was getting over my death. I thought it was all going to be okay."
"Don't cry, Mom. Mom, please, don't."
Ever so gently, Shun hugged her shoulders.
"I'm invisible. She doesn't know I'm here."
Shun's mom kept crying until it got dark, and he stayed by her side. On his return to Heaven, Shun thought about his parents every single day. "I was sure that at some point things would return to normal for Mom and Dad, but it looks as if their grief will last for the rest of their lives. And although I can be with them, there's nothing I can do to help them." Shun was sinking into despair.
"Well, there's nothing else for it. It's time I asked God for help."
Shun called out in a loud voice, "God, I've got a favor to ask." Shimmering out of the mist, God materialized.
"I believe you called."
"My parents are still mourning my death, but there's nothing I can do for them, and it's just,
unbearable.
God nodded as he listened. Well, I do understand how you must be feeling.
Thing is, that's life, isn't it?
But your mom and dad will be able to see you again here when their own numbers are up. Shun understood God's words, but he still didn't feel any better.
It's too much for my parents to bear, though. And it's impossible for me to live happily here in heaven knowing the pain that my parents are going through. Shun found he was almost shouting.
It is a tricky one. Nowhere's as pleasant as heaven.
God was deep in thought.
Well, I'm not saying there isn't a way to help your parents.
He then told Shun something quite unexpected.
Namely, being born to your parents as their child once again.
Hearing this, Shun's heart leapt with joy. Really? Can you honestly do that? His voice was ragged with excitement, and his heart beat faster. If this can really happen, I'll go back to them right now.
But, as if reading Shun's mind, God quickly went on. There is, however, one small catch. God looked Shun straight in the eye. Once you are born, you won't be Shun any longer. All your memories of Shun, of being Shun, will cease to exist.
So there won't be any me anymore. Shun's hopes withered. My existence will be wiped out forever.
Now Shun understood a bit better why Kazuo and his other friends were staying on so long in heaven.
So what do I do?
Shun wavered.
If I'm not going to be myself anymore, what's the point of being reborn?
From heaven, Shun stared down at the blue earth. A whole month had passed, but Shun still hadn't made up his mind. He hadn't gone back home, not even once. Life in heaven suited Shun well, and the thought that he would be seeing his parents here someday gave him a degree of comfort.
Time will sort out everything, Shun had started to believe.
By and by, a year went by since Shun had died. On the following Sunday, Shun revisited his old home for the first time in a long time. His mom wasn't in the house, however. He was wondering whether she had gone out shopping when the phone rang. Shun's dad came to answer it.
I see, he said. I'll be right over.
Shun's dad's voice was an empty husk. He dashed out of the house and Shun followed, with an ominous feeling. They arrived at the hospital. Shun's dad wore a grim look.
Mom's been hospitalized?
Shun entered her room and gasped with surprise.
Can this really be my mom?
Lying on the hospital bed was a wrung-out and sickly pale mom. She almost looked like a stranger. Shun's dad, too, looked utterly exhausted.
No way. How can Mom have ended up like this?
Shun himself was too gutted to make a sound.
When we all lived together, Mom used to be so cheerful, so bright. This was appalling.
The doctor concluded his examination and spoke. Based on her current condition, he said, I'm afraid there's no guarantee that she'll pull through. Before the doctor had even finished, Shun rushed up to his mom and shouted,
Mom, you mustn't die yet. Don't die. Please, 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 just don't.
But his voice couldn't reach where she was.
No, this is too much to take. Even if we met in heaven, this woman here isn't the same mom I used to love.
Even though Shun's mom couldn't hear his voice, in her delirium she called out his name.
I want to see Shun. Shun. Shun.
Shun couldn't bear the pain anymore. It was strangling him, almost.
I thought we could both cope with being separated so long as our hearts stayed connected. But you've lost your spirit and your will to live, haven't you, Mom?
His heart was being torn down the middle.
It's me who caused this grief. So it's me who has to help her now. If I don't do what I can, she's going to die of a broken heart.
Shun made up his mind.
The future is a thing we build.
He summoned up every ounce of courage, but spoke calmly.
Please, God, I want you to return me to my mother.
In the air, many colored orbs appeared, and inside each one was a tiny gold sphere. Then, before Shun's eyes, one by one, the orbs popped.
Chiming, chiming, chiming.
Shun thought he recognized the bell-like sound from a long, long time ago. In her hospital room, Shun's mother woke up from her sleep. Shun's father was anxious.
How are you feeling?
But she didn't make any reply.
Look, if you're feeling bad, I'll fetch the doctor.
But just as he was about to hurry off, Shun's mother opened her mouth to speak.
Shun came to see me in my dream.
Shun's father held her hand.
That's nice, love.
She went on with tears in her eyes. Shun told me, I'm right here, always. So you're not to cry anymore, okay? He looked terribly unhappy because of the state I'm in. I need to pick myself up and put all the pieces back together again.
Shun's father nodded.
Yes, Shun is always watching over us. Let's somehow begin again. Make a fresh start.
At the window, the first snow of the year was falling lightly. The snow crystals had formed from Shun's tears and were God's proof that a boy called Shun had once lived in this world.
Look, said Shun's mother. It's snowing. It's beautiful.
First snow, said Shun's father. He always did love the snow, didn't he?
5 years came and went. As had been promised in the year after Shun's decision, a new baby had arrived in Shun's family. She was a girl and was named Nozomi to signify hope. Nozomi was due to start kindergarten that spring.
Hang on, Nozomi, her mom called out. Wait for me. I'll run ahead a bit, Mommy, Nozomi called back as she ran. Mommy walks so slowly. As soon as I get to the supermarket, first thing I'll do is to buy some chocolate.
She ran on without looking where she was going and bumped into someone.
Oh, I'm very sorry, said Nozomi.
Are you okay? Asked a man in a red hat.
Hey, you're the one who... Do you know me?
Asked Nozomi curiously.
Who are you?
The man hunkered down on his heels.
Are you back here already?
This here old man's an angel, believe it or not. Nozomi thought this was a bit suspect, because angels are supposed to have wings and live in heaven.
Oh, no, you're not.
She stared back at the old man with her big round eyes. A cheerful laugh escaped him.
Anyway, are you having a content enough life?
What does a content life mean anyway?
Nozomi had to think about this. Mommy and Daddy quite often say, we're having a pretty content life, so yes, I must be having a content life too. Nozomi beamed at the old man.
Of course I am.
Finally, Nozomi's mom caught up with her daughter, out of breath.
What are you up to now?
Talking to him. Nozomi turned back, but there was nobody there.
Oh, where did he go?
Nozomi looked around.
There was this funny old man. He said he was an angel.
I've told you not to talk to strangers, Nozomi's mom said a little sharply.
So that old man was a stranger?
Nozomi's heart went taut with a sort of joy.
What's this I'm feeling now?
Anyway, said her mother, let's get on with the shopping, shall we?
Oh, yes, the chocolate.
Mommy, can you buy some chocolate?
One bar for me and one for my brother, so that'll be 2 bars, please.
All right, all right. But you're going to scoff them both down, I bet.
That's because he says I can have his.
Lucky you to have such a nice brother. On their way back from the supermarket, Nozomi's mom was thinking about Shun.
One day, in the future, I'll see Shun again. Until that day, I'll manage. I'll manage just fine.
Nozomi started running off again.
Mommy, let's go and see the cherry trees that my brother used to love.
The things my brother used to like are the same things that I like. Gazing at the cherry blossoms, Nozomi wondered what sort of a person Shun was.
Afterward. What am I going to be if my autism can never be cured? When I was little, this question was always a big, big worry. I used to be afraid that as long as I had autism, I'd never be able to live properly as a human being. There were so many things I couldn't do like other people, and having to apologize day in, day out totally drained me of hope. I hope that by reading my explanations about autism and its mysteries, you can come to understand that all the obstacles that present themselves don't come from our selfishness or from ego. If all of you can grasp this truth about us, we are handed a ray of hope. However hard an autistic life is, however sad it can be, so long as there's hope, we can stick at it. And when the light of hope shines on all this world, then our future will be connected with your future. That's what I want, above all.
The End. You've been listening to The Reason I Jump, the inner voice of a 13-year-old boy with autism, by Naoki Higashida, translated from the Japanese by K.A. Yoshida and David Mitchell, narrated by Tom Picasso, with an introduction by David Mitchell, narrated by me, your host, Tim Gerard Reynolds. This book was directed by Andy Paris. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Embracing the Wide Sky, A Tour Across the Horizons of the Mind by Daniel Tammet, narrated by John Keating. Daniel Tammet is a widely praised and internationally renowned author for his vivid depictions of life with autistic savant syndrome. In this fascinating new book, he writes with characteristic clarity and personal awareness as he sheds light on the mysteries of savant's incredible mental abilities, and our own. Tammet explains that the differences between savant and non-savant minds have been exaggerated. Autistic thought, he argues, is an extreme variation of a kind that we all do, from daydreaming to the use of puns and metaphors. Embracing the Wide Sky combines meticulous scientific research with Tammet's detailed descriptions of how his mind works to demonstrate the immense potential within us all. We also discover why there is more to intelligence than IQ, how optical illusions fool our brains, and why too much information can make you dumb. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So visit us at recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.